Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, joined by political correspondent Steve Missler and Mal Leary. Gentlemen, welcome.
Morning.
Good morning.
Well, the 2018 vote counting is almost over. The last major result came when Secretary of State Matt Dunlap ran a ranked choice vote tabulation in the 2nd Congressional District and announced Democrat Jared Golden had won. Republican incumbent Bruce Poliquin, who has launched a legal challenge to ranked choice voting, says his legal challenge will continue. There are also a handful of legislative races to be decided soon, but we're going to focus for now on that 2nd Congressional District race, the very first congressional race in the country to be decided in a ranked choice vote recount. So first off, Steve Missler, what was it like being there in the room while a nationally watched vote was tabulated?
Well, it was really weird because you had all this scrutiny and attention focused on this count. And behind the rope was Matt Dunlap, the Secretary of State, and Julie Flynn, the Deputy Secretary of State, who were just sort of being themselves, which, as we all know, is sort of self-effacing and, in Dunlap's case, very self-deprecating. And so it was really this low-key sort of process, but also very, like, painstakingly methodical too. At one point, as we kind of thought once we got the notice that the count was going to happen, that the count would just happen at that moment. But then, for the sake of transparency, Julie Flynn dove into this Excel spreadsheet demonstration because they needed to reconcile some ballots from, I forget which town it was at this point, but they had to reconcile the ballots so that they were processed properly.
And then here it's Golden space, Jared F. And we have the three letter designation for the party in front of the two party candidates, just a way the system brings it through.
She wanted to do that in front of the cameras so that there wasn't any claims of wrongdoing. So it was sort of delayed. And so there's all this suspense was just sort of building up to this one moment. And then Dunlap announces the results. And it was so understated given the stakes here. He was just sort of like, oh, looks like Jared Golden won the ranked choice election. And that was it. It was really interesting. And it was interesting to read how the national media observed that count. And there was one really funny account in Slate where they described Dunlap and Julie Flynn as basically your mom and dad fiddling with a computer, which is kind of the way it, if you step back that far, it did feel like that at times, although it was very serious. I mean, I would be remiss in not pointing out the fact that there were video cameras and sound recording devices, and they weren't just from the press. I mean, there was attorneys in there watching this process for the past week, and they were basically trying to make sure that all the I's were dotted and all the T's were crossed. And if they're not, they could be used in a legal challenge. And so there was at one point people filming the results of this very methodical and really sort of mundane process.
So the state says that Golden won, and Republican Bruce Poliquin followed that up by insisting that he won via a plurality vote. So Mallory, what's going to happen now?
Well, I think it's important to point out that he was insisting he won long before the ranked choice voting was announced. Mm-hmm. He started laying the groundwork saying he'd won the plurality of the votes, and therefore he was the winner because that's the historic tradition of the state of Maine. In fact, one of his attorneys, Josh Tardy, was in the audience, and I was able to catch him as he was going out the door and said, what's going to happen next? He says, we're going forward with our lawsuit. We still think it's unconstitutional. We're going to make that argument before Judge Walker in federal court in Bangor. And we're hopeful that at some point they will decide that, yes, indeed, the use of ranked choice voting in congressional elections is unconstitutional. So they're pushing forward with this case, regardless of the fact that Jared Golden will be certified by the state as the winner because our state law is based on ranked choice voting right now. And until a judge steps in, it's the law.
It was interesting, too, that, you know, yesterday's runoff, there was under this cloud, perhaps, of it being actually stopped by the same judge that Poliquin is appealing to here. His name is Lance Walker, a federal judge, but he, just before they ran the tabulation, he basically ruled on what was a restraining order. What was interesting about that restraining order is it didn't just say, you know, you haven't demonstrated enough for us to take this extreme measure of stopping an ongoing count. They actually took apart several of Congressman Poliquin's constitutional challenges here. I mean, at one point he wrote, "Where no constitutional infirmity appears likely, it is the remedy is to persuade one's fellow citizens of the correctness of one's position and to petition the political branch to change the law," which decoded is basically, don't come to me, go and try to change the law through the political process. So I don't know. You don't want to read too much into that, because you don't know if if there's other parts of Poliquin's argument that will have some, you know, will survive this challenge of his. But it seems to me anyway that Judge Walker is skeptical of several of the claims that he's laid out so far.
I was at the hearing in Bangor when this arguments were first made. And what was most interesting to me and some other observers was Judge Walker was very expressive in his facial responses and sometimes in his questioning of these arguments when they were brought up. You could almost see the raised eyebrow that said, "You're really arguing this?" And, you know, that was quite amazing. And to Steve's point, I think more telling was his dissection of the reliance on a Second Circuit Court of Appeals decision in terms of allowing plurality as a way in which the state of New York could elect its elected representatives. The court very clearly said it was all right to use plurality. And what was being argued by Poliquin's lawyers was that, no, that sets the precedence because they're saying this should be the way to do it. Well, Judge Walker's having none of that. He's saying basically, no, they're saying this is one way to do it. It doesn't preclude the use of other ways, including ranked choice voting, which is now going to be adjudicated on some other questions, such as the Equal Protection Clause in the Constitution. So this thing's going to go on for a while.
Let's talk a little bit more about those legal arguments, though, that they've made. Mal, you were mentioning one, that kind of argument involving Article 1, Section 2, and how that has been interpreted by courts. But there were some other arguments that the Poliquin people have made as well.
Well, that's the Equal Protection Clause that says basically you can only have one vote. And the argument they're making is that under ranked choice voting, a person who decides to use the ranked choice voting system in essence has more than one vote, because they're casting a vote for their second choice and their third choice and their fourth choice and et cetera, depending on the number of people running in that particular race. It goes to the basic one man, one vote situation that has led to the redistricting, doing away with such things as in Maine, we used to elect our senators at large from a county. And that was found to be in violation of one man, one vote. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, that doesn't work. So they're trying to apply that language to ranked choice voting, saying that somehow this system that allows people to give their choices, second, third, fourth, whatever, is in violation of that. I mean, that argument has not been fully developed. In fact, when Poliquin's attorneys attempted to bring on a couple of expert witnesses that they had, Judge Walker would have none of that. He said, no, I'm taking that under advisement. He just wanted to get to the issue of the temporary restraining order, which he ruled on just before the ranked choice vote was conducted by the Secretary of State.
Now, Governor-elect Janet Mills has said she would support a constitutional amendment to institute ranked choice voting more widely. As Mainers know, since they've just been to the polls, we were not using it for elections for the governor and the legislature. What would be involved in amending the Constitution to allow ranked choice voting in state races?
So the way it works is the legislature would first have to pass a constitutional amendment that would then go to voters to be ratified. Now, the key hurdle here is they need two-thirds of the legislature to do that, to actually get it to voters. Now, as we all know, Democrats now control the state legislature, but they don't have a supermajority. So they don't really have enough votes to do what Janet Mills has promised to do. Now, and the other thing is that Republicans, who I've just watched the reaction yesterday to the runoff, they already see ranked choice voting as sort of this existential threat. Some of them believe that a true conservative would not be able to be elected under this system. And you think about it, Governor Paula Page won in 2010, and he's a true conservative, right? And that was the impetus for a lot of people to institute ranked choice voting. Progressives or Democrats don't want a true conservative just governing to this base, which is arguably what LePage did for 8 years. You know, what'll be interesting to me is if Poliquin, who's sort of become this slain martyr for plurality elections, whether he becomes the rallying cry for the GOP to escalate its opposition to ranked choice voting. And I suspect that that's going to happen, which I think would make any sort of constitutional amendment to come out of the legislature even more difficult than it already is.
Well, there are some other things that are much more in the governor-elect's control. One of them is assembling a staff and commissioners and all of those other political appointments. What has she done so far, and what can we expect from the process during the transition?
Well, she set up an executive search committee to help her find folks who want to serve in the cabinet-level type positions and on her senior staff as governor. This is an incredibly daunting task that faces her and her transition team, because they've only got a couple of months here, and she's being sworn in on January 2nd. And she already has an agenda of things she wants to get done. She told me she's going to bring back something that we haven't seen in a long time. It's called a supplemental budget. They used to be commonplace, where you have a budget that shifts money around to balance the budget for the current year, and she's going to use that to fund Medicaid and put it all into a little package and send it to the legislature. Well, that means she's got to have her finance commissioner in place and her commissioner of health and human services in place. And all of those positions have to be vetted by this executive search committee, and then they got to pass the final test, which is Janet Mills. And she's going to have to be able to relate to that person, to work with that person. Very, very difficult mix to get done in 2 months' time. Just to make life even more difficult, I will add the fact that just over a month after she's sworn in, she has to present a 2-year state budget to the legislature. That 1,000-page document is always controversial, and it always is very difficult to put together.
Maine transitions have often seen some commissioners roll over even when parties change. Do we have any signal from Mills as to whether she might be open to keeping any of Paula Page's commissioners on?
I honestly haven't had that level of discussion with her yet. I could envision some of the commissioners that are currently here perhaps being kept because they are in agencies that are typically apolitical. That would be something like, I don't know, Department of Marine Resources or something, or maybe even the Department of Transportation. Those are typically pretty apolitical agencies, you know. But some of the more politicized agencies, such as the Department of Health and Human Services or DEP, which is the Department of Environmental Protection, you know, the budget office, I don't see those people that are currently there staying there. And that also goes for a lot of the staff that's immediately reports to them. I think you're going to see a lot of people moving in and out of those agencies. There's going to be a lot of change, just as there was in 2010 when Governor LePage came in and really just cleaned house and jettisoned most of what was Governor Baldacci's administration. I mean, I think Janet Mills is going to do that. It's well within a governor's rights to make those changes. So it'll be really interesting to see how that all unfolds. And they don't have a lot of time to do it, as Mal points out. It was funny, the other day I was running around with my head cut off because ranked choice voting news was breaking all around me. And I ran into Ben Grant, who's a former chairman of the Maine Democratic Party, who's now also part of Janet Mills' transition team. And he says, "How's he doing?" I'm like, "I'm running around with my head cut off." He's like, "What are you talking about? I'm trying to build a government." So, you know, you get in a sense of what they're up against, and that's it. It's a daunting task.
We were talking briefly about the budget there before. That, of course, will require the new governor to work with the new legislature, which is organizing itself. What hurdles does it face?
Well, I'll just jump in real quick before Mal does, because he loves to talk about the budget. But so it's not just a spending document. It's basically a blueprint for the policy initiatives that cost money. that she wants to pursue and that are her priorities. So, you know, you can imagine that Republicans are going to be resistant to a lot of those initiatives, especially if they're around certain healthcare services within the Department of Health and Human Services. The Republicans don't have a lot of numbers to resist, but they do prefer to get a two-thirds budget out of here for a lot of reasons. It'll be interesting to see how Mills' administration negotiates with this new Republican minority, especially given that the Republican minority is basically new leaders. The leaders that we are accustomed to have been dealing with over the last 4 to 8 years are gone.
And you have to remember on the budget, Irwin, that 85 to 90% of it is really keeping government going the way it is now. The big battles that occurred, the legislature and the governor and even under Paul LePage during his 8 years, has focused on that last 10 to 15% of the budget. That's where the big battles are. Those are where the policy initiatives are. Those are the things that keep us here into the wee hours of the morning as they're trying to debate these things. I've got to give some credit here to Alec Porteous, the current commissioner of finance. He was ordered by Governor LePage and has delivered to the incoming administration a completed budget. And that means that a lot of the work for the boilerplate for that 85 to 90% I'm talking about is done. It's there. This is the money to keep this program going, the state library going, Secretary of State's office going. All of those things are already there and ready for them to work with, leaving them to deal with those much more difficult policy areas Steve was talking about.
That's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. Have questions about politics for Mal, Steve, or me? Send them our way. You can find us on Twitter and the Maine Public website. We air abbreviated versions of Maine's Political Pulse Fridays on Morning Edition. Now, we'll be skipping Thanksgiving week. A very happy holiday to you and yours. Join us again November 30th on radio, and the Political Pulse podcast will go online later that day. Our producer is Willis Ryder Arnold. Music is from Rob Holt. For Maine Public, I'm Erwin Gratz.